All right, Wrestling with Theology fans, this is Pastor Dugman, and we are here in our monthly look through the history of the Lutheran Reformation. This month, looking at the imperial diets that make up the backbone of the history of the Reformation in Germany. Although we typically only look at the Diet of Worms in 1521 and the Diet of Augsburg in 1530, there are actually seven imperial diets in the 16th century that are important to understanding the Lutheran Reformation. The first one is not the Diet of Worms. It is the Diet of Augsburg in 1518. Then we have the Diet of Worms, two diets of Speyer, and then three diets of Augsburg after, starting in 1530. So the first question is, what is an imperial diet? It was the deliberative body of the Holy Roman Empire. It came out of the Hoftage of the Middle Ages. It became a permanent assembly in Regensburg from 1663 to 1806. It was not formalized until the late 15th century, when in 1489 the diet was commonly called the Reichstag, which is still even into the Weimar Republic is considered the highest the highest level of government. The diet was divided into three colleges: the electors, the imperial princes, and the imperial cities. These three colleges were answerable only to the Holy Roman Emperor himself. In the Golden Bull of 1356, the seven electors of the Holy Roman Empire were designated. You had the Archbishop of Mainz, the Archbishop of Cologne, and the Archbishop of Trier representing the church. Then you had the King of Bohemia, the Electorate of the Palatinate, the Elector of Saxony, and the Margrave of Brandenburg. After the Reformation, this rises and falls in number. I think there was 11 electors towards the end of the empire. But in each of the imperial diets, the important business of the Holy Roman Empire that was facing it at that time was conducted. This made it much easier for an empire with hundreds of duchies, states, cities, wards, kingdoms, whatever, to have a single government to look towards. So let's look at this. The first one that influences Luther is the Diet of Augsburg in 1518, which takes place from July to October of that year. It is the last of the imperial diets held by Emperor Maximilian I. He dies a couple of months after the diet is done. His main point in the diet was to elevate his grandson Charles to the title of the King of the Romans so that his election would be automatic when Maximilian died. The electors would not allow it. On the other side of it, Pope Leo X wanted Luther brought to Rome for examination because of the 95 Theses and the Heidelberg Disputation. Frederick the Wise persuaded the Pope to have Luther examined in Augsburg instead. So on October 12th through 14th, Cardinal Cajetan questioned Luther about the Pope's right to issue indulgences. The questioning degenerated into a shouting match between the two with no resolution possible. However, Cajetan had been ordered to arrest Luther if he did not recant, and Cajetan did not do that. So Luther was free to go once he made his escape from Augsburg. We fast forward a year and a half, and we've got Leo publishing the papal bull Exsurge Domini on June 15, 1520. He, in that one, tells Luther he's got just a few months, 2 months actually, to recant or be excommunicated. The newly elected Holy Roman Emperor Charles V, although not automatically elected, but it didn't take much, he called the imperial diet for Worms to start in January of 1521. Luther was summoned to the diet in order to answer the charges of heresy against him. Luther refused to recant his writings and was declared a notorious heretic by the Edict of Worms on May 25th. Go back to last month's episode for more detail on the Diet of Worms and how all that played out. 5 years go by. And there's been other diets in Nuremberg in 1522 and 1524 seeking to enforce the Edict of Worms, but they are unsuccessful. There are so many impracticable death sentences in the edict, for everyone from electors protecting Luther to printers printing his material to distributors. Anybody found with anything of Luther's in their possession faced the death sentence. And it got to be to where, as Luther talks about in the Large Catechism on the Seventh Commandment, if we hung all the thieves, you know, there'd be not enough gallows or executioners. So also, if you tried to go through and kill off everybody who had anything to do with Luther, you'd eventually run out of people. I mean, there's just too many to handle. So in the summer of 1526, Charles called the Diet of Speyer. But Archduke Ferdinand I of Austria, Charles's younger brother, presided over the Diet. The Luthers were emboldened to profess their faith because the empire was under threat by invasion by the Ottoman Turks from the outside, as well as the internal struggle between the emperor and the pope. These pressures caused a compromise that favored religious freedom in their own territory. So on August 27, 1526, the Diet declared that a general council should be convened to settle the religious questions once and for all. Unfortunately, that council would not happen for another 20 years. 3 years later, as Luther is publishing his large and small catechisms, a second diet is called in Speyer, this time in March 1529. Once again, Ferdinand is presiding over the diet instead of Charles. Ferdinand condemned how the princes interpreted the diet's recess from 3 years earlier. Specifically, he denied the princes' rights to choose what religious reforms were allowed in their territories. He demanded that all return back to Catholicism, and that Catholicism be the one and only legal religion in the Holy Roman Empire. The Lutherans protested Ferdinand's demands on April 25, 1529, which is where we get the appellation Protestants. They protested everything the Diet proclaimed that was against the Word of God, their conscience, and the decision of the 1526 Diet. This protest was signed by Elector John the Steadfast, Margrave George of Brandenburg, Dukes Ernest and Francis of Braunschweig-Lüneburg, Landgrave Philip of Hesse, Prince Wolfgang of Anhalt, and representatives from 14 imperial cities. So the Diet of Speyer, neither one of them really did anything for us, except for push us to Augsburg, 1530, Charles actually being there. And so he calls this because he wants to bring the reformers and the Pope into at least a political agreement so they may be united in their defense of the Holy Roman Empire against the advances of Suleiman the Magnificent and the Ottoman Empire. Suleiman had almost conquered Vienna in 1529. Vienna was the major headquarters for the Habsburg Empire, of which Charles was also the leader. In order to achieve this unity, Charles prompted all sides. He allowed everybody to come in and bring forward a confession of their beliefs so they could be hashed out and a united front for the faith be given. As the Wittenberg theologians were preparing, Melanchthon had written articles in Schwabach in July of 1529 following the Second Diet of Speyer. These 17 articles form a basis for the first section of the Augsburg Confession. In March of 1530, John the Steadfast called for another confession to be written. The drafts of this confession has become known as the Torgau Articles. The Torgau Articles, however, were scrapped when news of Johann Eck's 404 articles for the Diet in Augsburg were published, where Eck attributed almost every known heresy to Luther. The Augsburg Confession was crafted as a gentle and peaceful response to the emperor's summons. On June 25th, 1530, the Augsburg Confession was read by courageous Lutheran laymen led by Johannes Brahms. Immediately, Charles required the papal delegation to respond with a confutation of the Augsburg Confession. It was delivered on August 3rd. Unlike the Wittenberg delegation, who gave Charles V the copy of the confession in both German and Latin, no written copy of the confutation was given. In fact, it would not be officially published until 1559. Charles instructed the Wittenberg delegation to accept the confutation as read and reinstate many of the items they had removed from worship, or else. The Wittenberg delegation refused to accept something that they could not read for themselves. Quickly after the diet was over, Melanchthon set to work on an apology, a defense of the confession. Both were publicly published in April and May of 1531. After the diet was over, the Lutheran princes sought to form a military alliance to protect them from invasions and conquest by the emperor and the pope. On February 27th, 1531, the Smalcaldic League was established in the city of Smalcald by Philip of Hesse and John Frederick I. Both pledged to help defend the other if they were attacked by Charles. Other kingdoms, cities, and duchies were added upon acceptance of the Augsburg Confession. The League would grow until the Smalcaldic War of 1546-1547. Charles defeated the League in the Smalcaldic War, and he called for another diet in Augsburg. On May 15, 1548, he demanded that the Lutherans accept the Augsburg Interim. Protestants were required to readopt Catholic beliefs and practices, such as the seven sacraments and transubstantiation. Protestants were required to recant the doctrine of justification by grace through faith alone. They were also required to proclaim that the Pope was head of the Church by divine right. The interim allowed Protestant clergy to marry and to offer communion in both kinds. It was not a complete rejection of everything in the Reformation. But the Augsburg Interim is the moment that Philip Melanchthon's willingness to compromise the faith forced him out of the leadership role of the Reformation in the eyes of many. Melanchthon tried to regain some of his lost prestige over the next few months. He worked with Maurice of Saxony to produce another interim, which would have more concessions for the Lutherans. The Leipzig interim of December 1548 was a miserable failure. While allowing more things for the Protestants to withstand, there were a lot more concessions that Philip made, not only towards the Catholics, but also towards the Reformed. Those who accepted the Leipzig interim would become known as Philippists. Those who opposed it would become known as Gnasio Lutherans or genuine Lutherans. And we see this, these are the two groups that are the main forces that are at odds when we get to the Formula of Concord. And the Concordists, the six men who wrote the Formula of Concord, are a middle group trying to find resolution between those two groups. Finally, we have the Diet of Augsburg in 1555. The Leipzig interim failed. Maurice of Saxony betrayed Charles, who he had supported in the Smalcaldic War, and attacked his forces in Augsburg in April 1552. The battles continued until September of 55. On September 25th, 1555, Charles and the Smalcaldic League signed the Peace of Augsburg. This treaty granted Lutheranism status as the second legal religion in the Holy Roman Empire. Religious freedom was given according to the principle curius regio, eius religio. His the realm, his the religion. The ruler's religion was automatically the official religion of his territory. And as we'll get to in the English Reformation in a couple of months, that becomes a serious issue there. But England is not the only place where it becomes cumbersome at times, because it happens on the continent as well, in places even like Wittenberg. But that is going on later on in the history we're not talking about in this section. But Calvinism did not receive this status until the Peace of Westphalia in October of 1648. So Lutheranism had a strong hold in the Holy Roman Empire and in much of Europe as the second religion besides Catholicism. And yet, it was another almost century before Calvin and his followers get that same ability. But again, that is the way it happens in politics. Not everybody gets the same thing all the time. Compromises have to be made. But as we look through the confessions, as we look through our own history, as the Missouri Synod, and as the American religious culture at all, we see that compromises cannot be made in the articles of the faith. What is most important to the faith cannot be let go. And unfortunately, as we will see as we move on, Melanchthon allows that to happen by changing the Augsburg Confession to help bring in the Calvinist. But we'll get into that when we get into what's happening in Wittenberg and in the Holy Roman Empire in a couple of months. Over the summer, we're going to take a look at the other places around Lutheranism that, and around Germany, that have the Reformation going on, or reactions to the Reformation. As next month, we'll talk about Switzerland and the work of Zwingli in Zurich and Calvin in Geneva. In May, we have the Counter-Reformation starting up by the Jesuits and Ignatius of Loyola to begin with, but proceeding on into the Council of Trent, which we will cover in detail, not necessarily as much detail as we could later on in the year. Then we move to England in June to talk about all of the stuff going on in there. Talk about the Anabaptist in July and John Knox in Scotland in August, as that comes towards the end of the time where we are looking at between Luther's birth in 1483 and the publication of the Book of Concord in 1580. And then in September, we will go back to the Lutheran lands in the Holy Roman Empire and see what is going on there. So that's where we're going in this trip down memory lane, so that we can see a little bit as to not only how we got here, but then how we got to where we are even in America, because the Swiss Reformed, the Dutch Reformed, the Anabaptists, the Scottish Reformed, the English Anglican Reformation, all of those things do tie into the Lutheran Reformation, and especially how Lutheranism has come about in America. So there are many things that we'll see, oh, that's where this comes from. And that is kind of my goal with this series through this year, of doing these historical broadcasts to make us understand that there is a lot more going on than just what's here in the Concordia of the Lutheran Confessions. Because there is a lot more, even more than just the editor's notes for all of it. But we'll get into those as we get into the Book of Concord again in January. But as I said, we have plenty of stuff going on this year in this. So I encourage you to be back next month as we go to Switzerland to see how Zwingli and Calvin and their followers all come about and have their differences and their interactions with Luther and the Reformers in Wittenberg. And I encourage you to still be with us through Digging Deeper. We are almost done with the Book of Revelation. When we get done with Revelation, we're going to go back to one of Paul's epistles, actually a couple of them, that have, I've tried a couple of times now to do in my Sunday morning Bible class. And every time I get to it, to get started, I end up having a vacancy. Like right now as I'm recording, I am in the midst of a dual parish vacancy that did not allow me to continue on with Sunday morning Bible class as I would like to do it. But we're going to put on the podcast here so I can finally get to Colossians and Philemon. So that's a lot of stuff going on over the course of this year as we look at it. Continue also for Pro Wrestling America as we continue down the track of the slope towards Remember Their Legacy that's coming up in May for you wrestling fans. Otherwise, all of the great things that are here that you can find on the WrestlingWithTheology.org webpage or the Facebook page, take advantage of all those. I am working to always have more and more stuff that I am posting so that it's not just these episodes, but that there actually is more to discuss. Because there is a lot for us to wrestle with. And that is why we're here, isn't it? To wrestle with the theology around us and to be strengthened in that fight. Amen.